So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling. It is an international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Oh, same old, same old. Really having a great week. I got a chai spiced stout that I'm going to be drinking here. The smell is overpowering the entire room at this point. It's very interesting. To break the kayfabe, we'll say we're recording here on Valentine's Day.
I know, right? Yeah. Lonely Hearts Club, buds.
Luckily for me, Valentine's Day is about 2 days before my wife's birthday, so I get the double whammy. So we're taking a trip out to visit her family this weekend and go to the Date Festival in Indio. So it's kind of a big, I don't know, I guess it's like a fair. I don't know exactly what you would call it, but it's...
How about festival?
Yeah, I mean, it's a festival, but you know what I mean? It's there's like circus rides, there's camels, they also do like monster trucks. There's like vendors, like, you know, selling like funnel cakes and things like this, but then there's also like the what is like a 4-H club, but I don't think that that's really what you have here, but it's like 4-H clubs type like events where you get like awards, and they do like best in show and like prize pig awards. It's like all kinds of stuff like that, so it's like a lot of different things all in one.
So it's like smaller than a state fair but larger than a carnival.
Yeah, for sure. It's like somewhere mixed in between the two, I would say, is what it is.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going down to Houston this weekend, taking my vacation, started actually today. And that's kind of why we're also recording earlier. And like, we're not doing CWF and NXT this week because we're recording Wednesday. And we haven't had a chance to watch it. And so we decided to do something a little different just so we could put some content out, reviewing three different shows off Powerbomb TV. The one they streamed live of the PCW show and the Anarchy Wrestling from Georgia show, along with IWL was up. So we were able, I mean, NWL was up, number 56. So we were able to review that one too. So we probably just as long as the show, but just be a little differently this week. I'm going to catch an Aero Lucha show. And like typical Lucha, other than the talent, none of the matches have been announced. But a lot of talent was supposedly on the show. Sammy Guevara, Juventud Guerrera, the Midgets are going to be there. The Hurricane's going to be there. Low-key, James Storm, extra talented. So, you know, I'm expecting it to be a pretty fun show. So my expectation level's high. And when I come back, I'll talk about it and stuff in depth. I don't know how in depth, but at least, you know, I'll with some notes. But I'm sure it'll be a high-flying, exciting show. I'm sure if it's anything like the Lucha Underground shows I've seen live when they tour, I'm sure it'll be. I'm sure I'll have a blast. Any wrestling at the fair?
You know, there was a local wrestling company in like Indio area called Alpha Omega Wrestling, and I believe that they did some stuff at the Date Festival before. Years ago, but they haven't done it anymore since. They also kind of moved, and they run sometimes out of like Victorville, sometimes out of like the Inland Empire, San Bernardino, and then sometimes they still run in the Coachella Valley. So I don't think there'll be any this weekend, but next weekend or next week got Bar Wrestling and AWS coming up. Both, I mean, Bar Wrestling doesn't really ever announce their cards, but they've always got some good acts. The same, you know, I think a couple half dozen guys and girls that are on every show and have some good wrestling. So I'm 50-50 on going to that show because it's a Wednesday and it's a standing room only show. They don't have any, or it's not even standing room only. It's only standing, no chairs show. So we'll see if I end up going. The AWS, I'm also more likely to go, but still making up my mind on that one. But yeah, no wrestling at the Date Festival this year, I think, so unfortunately. But so for the Lucha shows, especially, I guess Era Lucha less scary, but for me, out here, I see these posters for Lucha shows, and I always get worried about going, because the people that they list, I'm always like, is it going to be the real guys? Like, half the time, I'm like, is it just going to be someone else under that mask pretending right. to be them, and it's not the real guy? So I don't know, do you ever worry about that? Do you think that happens in Texas at all? Because I figure that happens here in Southern California all the goddamn time.
I think it's more of a California thing, but I mean, I wasn't surprised. Then again, they don't run that much. You'd be surprised. I mean, they run Lucha, but they run it a lot more closer to the border. And you got to remember, Texas is freaking huge. So I'm not really that close to the border. So for me, it'd be a pretty good, it'd be a good 8-10 hour trek to get down there for a Lucha show. It's just something I haven't really done.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would assume that, you know, it doesn't happen too much in Texas, just because they're not running a lot of Lucha stuff there in general. But here in Southern California, there's Lucha shows, little tiny Lucha shows every weekend that then have guys who I assume are stars level guys from CMLL and AAA and stuff. And I'm always like, is that going to be the real dude? I mean, yeah, well, who knows?
Yeah, it's one of those things you got to find out for yourself, I guess, you know, and then mark them off on a promotion if you know they're not trustworthy, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. But hey, speaking of trustworthy promotions, we're watching all this Powerbomb TV stuff, and there's been a little bit of kerfuffle with maybe a non-trustworthy promoter booking a non-trustworthy promoter as well. What do you think about all this, Pete?
It's just so weird, because, I mean, it's funny. It's not funny, but for wrestling fans to take a stand when Vince McMahon's is a millionaire in our society, and he's about as crooked and scummy as he gets. I personally wouldn't put on, because I know how a lot of my fans are feeling, and if it's going to cost me money, then why? It boils down to, will IW Mid-South having Micah Elgin on the show, will that get me more subscribers or less subscribers? And the answer is, it's going to piss more people off than I probably wouldn't have made the deal. The whole thing with Adam Lash and him being part of Powerbomb, and then, you know, taking a stance on Twitter and attacking Powerbomb. To me, Powerbomb had no choice but to fire him. I mean, any company, I mean, if I'm running a company and one of my employees is on Twitter bashing it, one of my decisions, you kind of have no other choice. So, Adam Lash made that stance. And if he's able to live with that, that's fine. But I mean, for people to be angry that Powerbomb fired the guy over it I think that's absurd, to tell you the truth.
Well, I get you, but I don't. I mean, was he an employee or was he a partial owner? Because that's kind of the thing, too, is from what I'm hearing, is partial owner, and he's just been locked out of everything, and he's being treated as if he has no rights to any part of the company, even though, you know, he helped found it, and he should be considered owner, and he's just being screwed over because he's not in a position. I mean, this is his words on Twitter, that he's being taken advantage of because he's not in a position to fight it because of his kind of his money and his health issues at the moment, and so they're kind of just pulling a coup where he's getting screwed over from what should be his. So I get you that the company needed to separate themselves from him because it's a bad public look. Not what he's saying, but that he's publicly feuding with the company that he's supposed to be representing.
Yes.
Is a bad look. That's what I'll say. I don't.
And if he's an owner and doesn't believe in the thing, he should be able to pull his money out if that's the case.
Right, and that's, I guess, kind of what it comes down to with him getting screwed over, is they've locked him out of everything, and he's not being compensated or given the money that should be his, you know? And, I mean, what does that come down to? What does that entail? What contracts did you, you know, not cross the I's, dot the T's? What bank accounts were you not involved with? What, you know, what decisions did you make in the process of setting the thing up that now you got to take a bath on it? You know, again, that's on him. But like you said,
to me, there's no baby face in this. It sounds like to me. I mean, there's a lot of gray area here,
right? And I think that what he did, what Lash did, was a power play, and what Vin Gerard did was a bluff call. And I think that for political posturing, he made the worst possible choice. And this is Vin Gerard, and you know, he represents Powerbomb in a nebulous way, because I don't know the workings completely. I don't know. It was probably not 100% his decision, but he's the guy who's like considered the one making the decision. They're the two founders of the company. That's where the divide happens. Is that now, I mean, he's got the worst of both worlds. Now he's got the, you know, the people who are on the side of Mike Elgin are like on the side of IWA, I want to watch Mike Elgin, all this stuff, are now riled up about all the negativity that's been spread. And then now anyone who was pro what Lash is saying and all this stuff are now going to be against the company as well. So basically he's going to lose the money on both ends. It feels like you're going to lose the money on both ends. And you're just kind of like, I don't know, maybe you would have been better off just biting the bullet on this one and trying to get past it and then deal with it from there. I mean, it's famously the Vince McMahon Ultimate Warrior thing, right? It's Warrior tried to stick him up for money right when he's supposed to be going through the curtain. And what does Vince McMahon do? Yeah, I'll give you the money, I'll give you the money. And then as soon as he comes back, it's like, fuck you, you're fired, you're not getting your money. You know what right. I mean? And it's like, as shitty and underhanded and conniving as you can say that is, it's better business because you're saving face in the public and then you can deal with it later. I really think that Powerbomb should have tried to get through the IWA shows and then try to restructure and deal with everything. But now you've got all this negative publicity that I think a lot of people are not going to want to even watch these shows. A lot of people are going to be sick and tired of Powerbomb for pulling this. And I mean, I hate to say it, but it's not even just this. I think that there's people, I mean, wrestling fans are notoriously cheap and they don't like to pay for anything and they want to pirate everything. And I think that people are having little hiccups here and there because the streaming and the playing of everything on Powerbomb is not always seamless.
Yeah.
It's not always perfect. So I think any excuse to then be like, well, it doesn't work that great, and now I don't like this, I'm unsubscribing. And I just think that it was a bad move all around. I think that Lash, like I said, he was trying to do a power play. He was essentially trying to hold the entire company hostage through social media. And I think that someone essentially called his bluff and was not willing to play that game with him. And I think that it just turns into a real shitstorm all around. It doesn't really help anyone in the business all around. But here's the thing I came out and said, and I've seen almost nothing about it, is like New Japan gets nothing. People do not even talk about New Japan in the same breath when it comes to this Michael Elgin stuff, and they book him.
You've heard a lot more on people boycotting indies or indies canceling bookings with him, drawing a stand because their fan base has said they don't want him on their shows. And New Japan feels like, yeah, you're right, getting like a free pass.
No one mentions New Japan using him. And it's, I mean, of course, it's a nice kind of Venn diagram that the people who are really, really standing and they love New Japan don't really talk about IWA Mid-South very often. You know what I mean? Because we know who that crowd is. And you know, it's the Voices of Wrestling crowd. It's like the kind of people like that. And they don't pay attention to American indies. And that's who's booking Michael Elgin that's getting shit on. And then a lot of those American indie people are not super high on New Japan. So it just feels like that flies under the radar in a way where it's, yeah, it's like if you're going to take a stand against no one should be booking Michael Elgin, then I'm sorry, but you can't be excited about, you know, being the elite and, you know, New Japan in Long Beach and all this, because they're booking him as well.
And that's his number one income is New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest company that books him. That's where he's a full-time employee. They supposedly, he got heat from everything, and then it seemed like it all just swept under the rug, and no one talks about it anymore in regards to New Japan.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's fucking wrestling is what it all boils down to. And
yeah,
so much politics, so much bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, and I don't know, maybe it makes me a bad person, but I don't give a shit about watching Michael Elgin matches at this point. If a company wants to use him, fine. I don't support him. I don't think that he's a good person. I think what he did was really shitty. But, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys who are really shitty, and there's a lot of people who are shitty that we don't even know that they're shitty. This is just one that we happen to be aware of how shitty he is, but there's, I mean, how many guys, how many, not just guys, how many wrestlers in general, how many promoters, how many, all of these people have some skeletons in their closet, you know? It's just...
I mean, it's a carny business. I mean...
Yeah, you know, and I think that that's something that gets thrown around and people try to act like, oh, you can't use that as an excuse. And I don't think when you said that right now, that it's a carny business, that's not your point. You're not saying that makes it all okay. You're just saying, you're just saying like, what can I do? We can try to hold them to a standard. We can't say that we don't want that. But I mean, I don't pay money to anyone who books Michael Elgin at this point. I haven't paid money to watch any Michael Elgin matches. So that's the most I can do. You know, I guess I could try to rally behind the idea of not supporting him and calling him out constantly. But, I mean, that decision ultimately is in the hands of someone like Ian Rotten. And I'm sorry, but he does not have the track record of being the kind of guy who's going to make that decision. Because if I had to, you know, take a stab in the dark, I would say that Ian Rotten does not think that Michael Elgin actually did anything wrong.
No, I mean, Ian Rodden's character, I mean, that's just something that you could do a whole podcast over, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was shocked to know that IWA was even involved with Powerbomb, just knowing Ian Rodden's history and the stances that Adam Lash makes half the time about this kind of social stuff. Like, I was shocked that Powerbomb was even partnering with them to begin with. Let alone that, like, Michael Elgin becomes the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm sorry, but the stuff that Ian Rotten has already done in the past is worse than... Well, I don't say worse, but is at least in the same realm as what Michael Elgin did.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, it's just a... I mean, it's a business full of bad people, honestly. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of nice... There's a lot of good people in the business, but, man, there's a lot of... scummy people who will manipulate. There's a lot of manipulation in the wrestling business, is all I'll say.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Oh, man. And what else is there? Did you watch any of the New Beginning show from New Japan at
all? Not yet. Yeah. On the docket.
All I did was watch the Okada match. And if you're one of them people who say that the Okada matches start out real slow and don't mean much, this is a prime example. I will say the last 15 minutes were really hot, but man, that first 15 minutes, I was just like, it was tough to get through. But I will say the Ospreay Takahashi match is really worth going out of your way to see. But that style of wrestling, man, is just really dangerous and. It's just going to just cripple these guys. I mean, the bumps Ospreay was taking on his neck. Those were my big complaints. Was he was getting killed with bumps. Same with Takahashi, don't get me wrong, where they could tell a similar story, but tell it a lot safer. And, I mean, I'm not a guy who, I'm a firm believer. If these guys want to do this to themselves, that's fine. But, it's just like you watch it and you're like, I'm just floored that they're telling a great story, but these bumps that they're taking are just so extreme. And I've never been a guy who needs guys, you know, landing on their necks and all this stuff to get a point across. They can do it in a lot safer manner and get the story over, if you ask me. And after all the punishment they take, it's almost funny where I ended up with like around four and a quarter star for the match between the two, but it easily could have been 4.5 if they ended up on anything else but Ospreay winning with his Oz cutter, because that move looked so phony compared to some of the punishment that Takahashi was taking. So it was actually pretty flat and anticlimactic. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, but that's a key element of every Ospreay match, I feel. It's like there's always got to be the most anticlimactic finish on like the craziest shit that you've ever seen, because there's no way for him to constantly build up and up. It just his wrestling style is just so scattershot. Like realistically, yeah. there's just no There's no rhyme or reason to a lot of what he does, and I think it bears out, especially in that
And here,
regard.
there was a lot of rhyme or reason, except he was doing bumps that would cripple a person, though, you know? So
Right.
it doesn't lead to a, I mean, unless they did some like super power bomb off the top rope onto his neck, there's just no way to top the bump that he was taking and the impacts and stuff for me anyway. And then to match on an Oz cutter, yeah, it's its finisher, but it doesn't look all that particularly nasty, you know? I've seen, you see cutters just getting blown off left and right. What's the difference between an Oz cutter, you know?
Yeah, no, that's definitely for sure. I mean, we talked about it just last week with his match with Adam Brooks, or maybe it was the week before, but I mean, it was just it's just it becomes so much, so repetitive, so just the same stuff over and over again.
All right, let's get on to the show, man. We open up with NWL number 56. I actually love the opening where it's Pierre Abernathy, one of the old Submission Squad guys, and he's playing the commissioner role, and but under the name Matt Jackson. That type of stuff is funny, you know what I'm saying? Where it's his name Pierre Abernathy, you know who he is, but he's using a he's just having a fun with it while you by being called Matt Jackson. I totally got a kick out of that. And this was with Marty Bell wanting a match, and they I thought they did it a pretty fun opening stuff with the segment. What you did you like the segment?
I liked the segment, but I got I was thrown off. I just did not recognize anyone here. And so I was not I was not into it. And then or not that I wasn't into it. I was just thrown off for a second, but I did like the segment. I did like cuz I mentioned like that the Matt Jackson just looks like shit. And then I love that he even says it. He's all, "You got me here looking all bad. I'm not put together. You don't want to be on camera when you're not all put together." So I liked that that he actually called himself out for that. So yeah, I thought it was fine. Coming forward, I didn't recognize Marty Bell, and then I did recognize her later. So it was interesting because I probably it might have changed my opinion of this if I had known it was her because I'm not high on her. But I actually did kind of enjoy it somewhat.
And you know, I've seen Pierre Abernathy for a while because he used to come down to Austin a lot. And I never thought much of him as a worker per se, but I always loved him as a character. So him in this type of role, I'm totally digging, I'll tell you that much. Then we get the besties in the world come out, and Vega kind of gives us a promo talking about how he hurt himself, but it's not career ending, but he's got to give his spot up to Matt Fitchett in the six-man pack challenge. I thought this was well done, and a good way to get Fitchett into the match, and well executed. And then we have Matt Jackson's out, and then we introduces a fake Gil Rogers, so we haven't been here for this. But once Gil, when Gil Rogers comes back, the place has got to explode because they were hot for him. Seem like they're hot for this angle right now. But overall, the whole segment was really well done. And then they finished it up kind of building to the Gil Rogers versus a fake kind of the fake Gil Rogers guy who supposedly retired him or got him out of the company. But I'm sure this is going to lead to a lot more, and we're just kind of in the dark right now since we just started watching the show. What'd you make of this segment? I thought it was overall it was a good. I like having giving us an angle and then giving us matches. It feels good. What about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was episode was definitely pretty character angle heavy, but it was good. I mean, especially to start. I liked Vegas promo a lot. I thought he was really good here. I liked Fitchett grabbing the mic to be the one who stands up to the president, give him some backbone when he's the one who's going to be working that night, and you definitely want to set him up, especially with the finish of the main event. So yeah, I thought that that was good. I liked Matt Jackson here. Good stuff. And I liked Michael Strider wearing the Gil Rogers shirt. And yeah, Gil Rogers came across like he's the, Hulk Hogan of this NWL, the most over guy in the company. It was crazy how much the crowd was into him. So yeah, they were chanting for him even before Matt
During
Jackson came
Vegas
out.
promo,
Yeah, when it was just the Besties promo, they were already mentioning Gil Rogers a bunch. So yeah, he must be a really, really over guy in this company. Unfortunately, me and you are not familiar with him.
Yeah, we'll get to them eventually, for sure. And you got to give Vega credit too for being able to not get tripped up when with the crowd interacting and engaging him on his promo. You can see a lot of guys get all nervous, but Vega remained under calm and controlled the whole entire time, huh?
Yeah, he was fantastic. He came across natural. He was poised. So yeah, he was very good here with a crowd that was a little bit unwieldy, and he got his point across, and I think he got the crowd behind him and what he had to say before it was all said and done.
Yeah, what do you think of Marcus Howlett versus Dick Draper? Jack
I
Draper, I'm sorry.
Dak
I'm playing
Draper?
porno here. I'm
Yeah.
watching a porno.
Ah, Dak Draper, I like him with showing off being able to overpower Marco. But Marco comes back with some grappling and some pinning combinations to show he's no slouch. Dak just is pure blue chipper written all over him. Big guy, big got real r lot of talent. Could definitely see something coming from that guy. Liked Marco here for his role. He made himself credible. You could buy into what he's doing here. Nice big cutoffs from Marco when he needed to, blocking power moves, countering Dr. Bombs, using some quickness on his offense. Dak Draper's got some nice hard hitting offense here after I kind of called him out for the weak lariats last time, and then finishes it off with the big Dr. Bomb. This was when I didn't realize that they put big commercial breaks in matches here in NWL, but what are you gonna do? It's just part of the whole thing, but I thought this was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was a good, solid match. Nothing I can really complain about. Then we get Marty Bell versus out, and it ends up being against Hudson Envy. And I thought they had a good solid match. I've this is Hudson Envy. I saw her for the first time live a couple months back, and I really dug her. And I thought she was good here. And I thought they had a good solid meat and potatoes match. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed the match. I think Hudson. I was upset in the beginning with the commentary talking about these are two of the hardest strikers in women's wrestling because I was like putting Hudson as a striker on the same level as Marnie Bell to me is a downgrade for her. But I thought the match they did pretty well to make her look good. Thought Hudson looked fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Hudson Envy being a local girl here. I've been getting to watch her for a long time. Some of her knee strikes, especially on the guardrail, looked fucking amazing. All of her strikes always look good. Really enjoyed the finish, the double arm DDT onto the floor, taking the count out from Marnie. I thought was a really good way to have Hudson lose in a convincing fashion, but not have her get beat cleanly in the middle of the ring for her debut here in the company. So you can kind of protect her somewhat. See where they go with her if they bring her back, even or if this is a one shot kind of thing. But yeah, I like that as a unique finish, and it also adds some edge to Marnie Bell. So it kind of serves both purposes there. So I really enjoyed that. So all in all, I thought this was good stuff, especially for me not being a fan of Marnie Bell. She was impressive here. I think you did skip over the Jake Frost promo.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I couldn't identify who in the hell he was, so
It's
I.
A Jake Dryden, big giant guy, but in NWL they call him Jack Frost, I think.
Oh,
And
okay, I know Jake Dryden. Okay, I just didn't recognize him. Okay.
yeah, and he, I have not seen him cut a promo in a very long time. He has become a very good promo. So for a guy with
Agreed.
his size and his promo ability, I'm just like, God, he could be a big time star. I mean, with his age, it sucks because he probably wouldn't show up in WWE. But if this was another era, he could be a big time money making draw right now. So.
Yeah, I've always liked him on the matches I've seen him work. Then we get after the female match, we get a Draper promo, which again was I thought was really good stuff, real solid. What about you?
Yeah, I love Draper's promo again. He kind of, or it's Dak Draper. Yeah, again, solid stuff. Good promo. He's like I said, a blue chipper kind of guy. I think he's a big time prospect. I don't know if NWL has him locked up with a big like a contract for a long time, but he's a guy who I could definitely see start to spread his legs a little bit more and work in more places would be good for him.
Yeah, and then we get a six-pack challenge with Fitchett, Bolt Brady, Howlett, Outlaw, Jet Royal, and I couldn't get make out the other guy. Did he make him out?
Okay, you said Outlaw, Jet, Royal. There was
I thought it was Miles something.
yeah, there was another guy who had a weird name. That's what I'm trying to remember. He had a, They kept calling him something that didn't sound like it would be a person's name, and now I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I kind of wish they do graphics of these guys.
So yeah, it would be
not
nice.
New, when you're new to the product, it makes it a lot harder, you know?
Yeah, it definitely, it's not an easy company to get caught up on, and you can't really even go back and do your kind of due diligence research because their results and stuff are not like easily available online because they're kind of in such a niche market that they're not on just like on the usual suspects for websites to get your results from. So yeah, it's definitely a little bit tough to get caught up to speed, but we'll see. We're only 2 weeks in and I'm already starting to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot so far, and I enjoyed this match, man. It's a, you know, it was all big moves, hot action, had some fun spots. I'm all for these type of matches. I think they're important on the card. You know, it's high spot heavy, you know, and if I'm more familiar with the workers, I might have picked up on a like a storyline going through, which I really couldn't because I'm not familiar with the history. But what I saw, man, I legit thought it was a 3-star match. That was really well done. And I thought it was a really good high spot, spot fest. But not an over choreographed spot fest either. You know what I'm saying? It felt natural and I felt a lot of the spots, some of them were convoluted, don't get me wrong. Like the four-way test of strength. I mean, come on. But other than that, I thought a lot of the spots felt organic and built well too and stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you all the way through. I think that this match did a good job of helping get a lot of guys over, especially for someone who's not an avid watcher of the show. Bolt Brady getting the only entrance and then having a lot of shine in here, it felt like. And I think that NWO was calling him by a different name when he first came over, so it's cool to see that they've loosened up on that. Yeah, they've loosened up on that, and they're kind of going with guys just calling him by whatever name they're using on the indies, so they have a little bit more recognition there. I actually enjoyed the start where the four faces take out the two heels to then have kind of their big dive off. From there, yeah, I think that they did a good job of getting over a lot of guys because I think Bolt Brady gets over from being kind of put over as the important guy who gets the entrance on TV. I thought that Jay Royal had a lot of really great strikes leading into the double Essex Destroyer that helped kind of pop him for me, kind of look like, oh, that's a guy I want to see more of. Felt like Matt Fitchett looks really good, also gets the win. So yeah, I think that they did a really good job of having a match like this that also served multiple purposes and got across something and wasn't just a chaos for chaos sake kind of match that you can get a lot of times with stuff like this. So yeah, all in all, it's a thumbs up. I'm with you. If I was given it a star rating, it does not seem out of the realm to be like a 3-star rated match here.
Yeah, and then that leads us to next week. They've already built it up to Fitchett and Wyatt, which I could totally get behind, and it could be a really damn good match, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Fitchett is a guy who I've been heavily into since I really first started seeing him in AAW, so, you know, a company putting him in the top-level spot there, getting a title match for their number one title for me is good stuff, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's weird, because a lot of these guys, I've been scrolling through the channel, and like Fitchett and Vega and like Pierre Abernathy. They have a guy named Thomas Shire, but I think he has a different name. A lot of these guys have worked ACW here in Austin regularly. And so it's just kind of cool. I mean, you got familiar with a lot of these guys like in 2011, 2012. I was there when Fitchett was a rookie. When he debuted in Austin, and the guy was good immediately. And he's gotten better and better each time I see him. So it's always cool to see a guy. You're like, okay, this guy has a future. And then you see him, and now he's, you know, I don't want to say a huge indie star, but I'd say he's a big indie star, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he's a guy that's definitely on radar for people like us. I think if you're at, like, kind of this level of fandom, you know and probably like Matt Fitchett. So, yeah, I mean, he's not...
Would you classify him kind of like a B-level indie star?
Yeah, I think he's a preeminent underdog. He's kind of a your boy level star, as they say on I think it's OSW Review. There's like a your boy has to be a guy who like is not super respected top of the card champion type, but a guy that you always kind of go to bat for and like and always think deserves a little bit more, and that's where I kind of put him. I think that most people probably see him that way, as a guy who who could definitely be used a lot better, could definitely do a lot more, but it is really solid worker and could be at that next level.
Yep. Man, on that note, why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll look at Anarchy Wrestling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back, and we're looking at Anarchy, ACW, War of the Monsters. And I thought this was a good, solid Southern card. Nothing too bad on it. And I thought we had a couple really good keeper matches on there, too. What were your overall thoughts on the show?
Very similar. Obviously, the production value is not super dynamic.
No.
So it does make it a little bit hard at times to even notice what you're watching. But like you said, keeper, definitely good stuff here. Nothing I'm going to have at the end of on my end of the year match of the year list.
No.
The only thing that I really, really didn't like was probably the women's match. Unfortunately, I just don't think that they were positioned in a way that they really had much of a chance to do anything. But that said, I mean, everything else was pretty good. I know that Anarchy and, you know, I know people who are involved in Anarchy. I know that they've been around for a long time, but unfortunately I think you're getting to the point in 2017 where having a women's division that's treated the way that theirs is kind of becoming unacceptable. Just that, but just becoming unacceptable, like not just detrimental, but like you almost can't get away with it anymore. You can almost get away more with the Evolve model of just not having women's matches instead of having...
If you can't do it right, don't do it at all.
Yeah, I think it's just not a good look to have a women's division that's really treated like an afterthought at this point.
Yeah, like when I was at the CWF Fan Fest, and this is, you know, obviously Stussy's not in charge anymore, but one of the questions was about female wrestling, and his, like, quote answer was, well, honestly, there's just not a lot of great female wrestlers where we're located, or are willing to come here. So it's hard to put matches on there that aren't good.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. And it really sucks to even have to say that, but it just is what it is at this point.
Yeah, because a lot of places nowadays, you're getting two or three female matches on a card, you know?
Yeah, and they're usually very good.
Good, yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
and
so,
varied. Not all the same match either. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, it opens up with Grissom and Koss versus Spectra and Blue. And I give you this 2.5 stars. I thought it was a fun shine by the faces. Start to get heat on Koss working over the leg. commentators are really on point with telling the story, which really helps. Using the counter tag formula, which I thought was, I mean, not the counter, but using the Southern tag formula is the easiest formula to do. And really, when you have young talent, I think it's the smartest thing to do. And I thought they did it well here. Nice, knee work by Carson off the apron twice. I liked the hot tag, but no, the ref doesn't see it. I'm always a fan of the ref making the guy, even though he made the tag, go back. I'm always a fan of that. And then finally we get the hot tag. Upset, nine title victory. I thought this was pretty well done. There was a couple, you know, timing issues here and there. But yeah, I give it a good solid 2.5 stars. I thought it was much better than I thought it was going to be. What'd you make of it, man?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that tag spot was interesting because the usual blind tag is always followed by the heels taking a blind tag that's fake, like a fake tag that the referee doesn't notice because he's too busy admonishing the baby faces. And here they set it up with a knee bar in the corner and the guy gets the real tag, but the ref doesn't see it. So they wait and they actually even do a second tag to make sure that the ref sees it. And I was taken aback because I don't know. I think I might like it this way better because it's more logical. It's like if the heels just saw that the referee is going to call any tag that he doesn't directly see, why would they take that risk like right afterwards? But the other way, being such an ingrained trope of tag team wrestling, I was kind of thrown off for a second. So I kind of liked that as something that was just a wrinkle that I noticed as being something different. But like you said, 2.5 stars. Babyface has got over good. I don't know why I feel like it didn't make sense why the other tag team came out here. The approved tag team came out because it didn't seem like they were helping the baby faces from any kind of cheating or anything like that. So it did feel odd that they even came out at all, sticking their nose in the business at the end. But it did not affect the match for me very much. Realistically, it was just it was kind of a questionable choice on the way that was set. But all in all, I did enjoy it. Especially, I will say this, one of the issues, this being the first match, fine. But one of the issues, too, is that having them come out the way that they did in a way that didn't affect anything, it really kind of just fed into the fact that, like, the entire show felt like there was a lot of interference and people showing up and being around and being involved. So I think this is one you could have got rid of, and then maybe it would have made it not seem so glaring that every match had something like that going forward throughout the rest of the card. But that would be that's like my only takeaway of, like, real negativity. Other than that, it was fine Southern-style tag team match.
Yeah. The other thing, we were talking about the production, but doesn't it feel like it has like a blurry like feed on it to you, or is it just me?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's done on purpose to like kind of give it that down homesy look, or
they need to wipe their lens,
or they just have really old equipment, or what it is, because it looks like this was shot in like the 1990s at the earliest,
80s,
realistically.
Yeah,
it could even be from the 80s, which is, I mean, I don't think that they have bad equipment. I just, it's weird that it looks like that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the lighting in the building, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's just nuts.
I don't know.
What do you think of Hollis versus Seth DeLay?
I liked the match. I would have liked like a full match from them.
Yeah.
I like Hollis. He's kind of playing, I think that it could probably get likened or characterized as being similar to a Brian Pillman kind of loose cannon character, but I like that he's wearing the street clothes. He really doesn't wrestle. He fights and he brawls more. I think he does a good job of still taking cheap shots and being that heel that I really liked without kind of using the wrestling tropes that he was doing for a long time. So I did like that. I think taking some cheap shots, walking around the crowd was good for getting heat. DeLay, I don't know, there was a little aggressiveness to DeLay early that made me feel like he was being a little bit too heelish in a match where he should have definitely just tried to be pure babyface. That said, when he did get his kind of hope spot at the end that gets essentially cut off by interference. I thought that he was looked good and the crowd got behind him. And then you get Slim J coming out to help him out. So I thought good stuff. I gave it 2.25 because, like I said, there wasn't much to it. And with the interference finish, it didn't even pay off. But there was a surprisingly good amount to like about this, to where I was like, I was excited to, I would like to see these guys have a full match.
Yeah, I'm with you. I felt kind of ripped off a little bit because it felt like they were going in a really good direction. Then the interference came and, you know, it was a schmoz. It was like a teaser, I guess. And this is just maybe part one of it. And then we get an Al Getz interview, and the Northern Lights, and they get pretty much beat down by disorderly conduct. It's just weird. We've already had a lot of interference so far, and then we get an interference in a interview. Speaking of things that could have got cut for the show, it might be this.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it, but yeah, I think it is weird, especially, yeah, you got so much interference and so much bullshit going on, and you can't even just have a straight up interview. It has to be bullshit and angled too. But I mean, I say bullshit, but I mean, that's kind of Southern wrestling, you know, they're doing it right with the kind of doing.
Yeah, there's Southern wrestling and then there's overdoing Southern tropes. And I feel like this show honestly overdid it a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
Not just a little bit. I thought they overdid it a lot. Where the key is to do it. Don't do it so much where you make the interference spots mean nothing. And that's what kind of happened today on this show, where the interference spots meant nothing. It could happen in an interview. It could happen in an opening match. Hey, it could happen in a main event. I mean, so, it has lost its luster each and every time.
Well, and not even just it could happen. I mean, it legitimately was happening. I think that there was some kind of interference or some kind of bullshit in almost every segment. And, yeah, it definitely affects the ability to, like, really care about that when you see it
so
much.
Yeah, and I don't
know.
Yeah, sometimes people use it as a crutch to tell a story. And I kind of felt like this was used in a bad way, not in a good way.
Yeah, and I didn't, again, we both didn't dislike the show. It's just, yeah,
no.
That's...
Yeah, know. I just thought the finishes could have been a lot more creative. I mean, we have interference in all these matches. Hollis and Delay go short because of interference. Interference in an interview. Then we have later on, we have AJ Gray and Slim J, where Slim J gets attacked before his match. We have the Lumberjack match where both monsters attack the Lumberjack.
Yep, I was going to get into that when we got to it. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, they ran the gauntlet of different types of fucking interference and stuff. It's like they had every level of interference you could possibly think of covered. It was almost, I don't want to say laughable, but it's almost like, geez, come on. It's almost like, this is like a, it was almost like Joey Janela's Spring Break trying to do a Southern indie show. A parody because the finishes were so blatantly Southern. Then we get a Jacob Ashworth versus Billy Buck. I thought this was okay. I gave it 2.5 stars. I like Buck with the Pearl Harbor to start. It was good. I like Buck working the arm. Buck on that arm working it. I like Ashworth using like power moves. I love the sell of the arm on the during the move of the match and stuff. I thought it was a good executed match. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Solidly done stuff all around. Ashworth is insanely over with the crowd. I mean, he's that everyman. I wouldn't consider him a great talker, but the crowd eats up everything he has to say. I like Buck really on him quick to start and really doesn't let up. Loved Buck's working over of the shoulder. Really heavy on that to make sure that Ashworth is going to be neutralized because he's a big guy who's put over strong. The lights go out in the middle of a match and Ashworth doesn't even seem to react to it, which I assume it was actually probably an issue and not something planned. But again, I think it makes it look bad when he doesn't react to it, even if it was, you know, you got to kind of on the fly. I mean, everyone saw that music went off and the lights all flickered on and off. And I kind of need to know that he noticed that or else it's kind of weird. Yeah.
When they do that gimmick and then all of a sudden someone's in the ring. Yeah, I mean, then you got to do it every time. You got to be consistent.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just have it be nothing. And I think it was a mistake. From there, it just kind of it gets finished off with a low blow with ref distraction and finished and roll up. And I'm with you, 2.5 stars. I thought it was well worked, but it was another one. You talk about kind of non-creative finishes. I mean, I mentioned the NWL finish from the women's match. I thought was like a nice creative match that did a good job of somewhat protecting someone and then also getting someone else over still. And then here it just felt like, the whole show you talked about it, like it was just not super creative finishes. It was just a lot of just fuck finish, stuff that doesn't really feel satisfying and it might like be a compromise finish instead of something that, that really kind of fits perfectly for what you're trying to put together.
Yep, and that leaves us to Gunnar Miller and Kyle Matthews, and then I don't know if you heard, out of the Scenic City Invitational, this year's Scenic City Invitational will be Kyle Matthews' last match. He's going to be a loss to wrestling, man. He's a damn good, talented wrestler who, you know, he never had the look to be a star in this business, but damn, he was a damn good worker, and I'm going to be down there, so he's one of my favorites. So it's going to be a tough night. I don't want to say it's going to be a tough weekend for me because bullshit, but it's a shame that we're going to lose a quality worker like him, who's just a guy who he just goes out. You know, he go 12 to 20 minutes every match, and he just has a good match every card. I mean, the guy's just a consistent worker. What you make of the match, man?
Just like you said, damn good worker. Gonna be definitely missed. I didn't know that until just recently. I watched this match, and coming out of it, the first thing I thought of, and I tweeted it out to both guys, is how much I'd love to see Kyle Matthews versus Dan Makabe, just because they both can work that technical style. But Kyle Matthews, even as the Nightmare Under That Mask, is just this amazing technical baby face who can get the crowd fired up and can high fly, but he can grapple. And Kyle Makabe can grapple too, but he's such a shitty heel. And those two just going at each other as pure baby face, pure heel, I think would be fucking phenomenal. You got the Southern, you know, he's wearing the mask in honor of his trainer. He's the Southern gentleman again. But then you expect, I mean, especially in nowadays, you'd almost expect him to be the heel going against the, you know, Pacific Northwest Canadian liberal from the hippy dippy, but he's just such a fucking prick who thinks he's so cool, and he's in, oh, I'm in bands and I have tattoos, you know, so he just comes across like such an asshole. I just think they'd be the perfect fit to have a big time match against each other. And then after I tweet that out, I find out Kyle Matthews is retiring in the end of August, so there's probably no chance in hell that match happens, unfortunately, because I think it's really a missed boat, because I think that would be fucking great. But this match here was, again, phenomenal. It just showed off Kyle Matthews. I think what really helped this match a lot was the commentary. Anarchy Wrestling commentary, I think, is at its normal pace, is just there. It's never bad, but I think it can definitely be kind of unimportant. But in this match, I think that they really helped the match, because them explaining and putting over Kyle Matthews' game plan really put him over and put over Gunnar Miller as well, talking about Kyle Matthews coming in fast off the bat, looking for dives, trying to essentially throw Gunnar Miller off his game of what he would expect from Kyle Matthews. I thought that was great. And then as the match starts to slow down, they talk about well, you know, he did start out fast action so that Gunnar Miller wouldn't, you know, what he would expect from Kyle Matthews is grappling and slow pace. But now as the match continues to go into the longer innings and continues to get into the deep waters, Gunnar Miller's at a disadvantage because Kyle Matthews is this, you know, long match worker. Gunnar Miller is not. So again, the commentary putting over these points really helps build the match, make it feel more important, while the guys in the ring are just delivering with the physicality as like top notch. I mean, everyone in the building loves Gunnar Miller. So unfortunately, I think that that in some ways affects for me that I think he's supposed to be a heel because he really gets no heat here. I think I've seen him be able to get heat, but I think this hometown crowd loves him so much. It's really hard for him to be a heel here. Unfortunately, Kyle Matthews, fantastic arm work over and over again. I love it's a another nice wrinkle of something that you don't get a lot. Kyle Matthews looking for that suicide dive over and over again. It's getting blocked. It's getting caught. It's getting cut off. You know, I like that it's a lot for him to get to it, to finally be able to get that suicide dive, make it mean something when he is able to hit it. I just love the focus. Gunnar Miller is actually showing some focus. He's seemingly working over the back repeatedly. Makes sense. I don't know history of Kyle Matthews with back injuries. I've been a big fan of his for a long time, but, you know, I don't know if there's something there, but it makes sense that he's trying to grind down the older guy's back, especially the smaller guy who's trying to use this fast-paced action, take away that core strength. You're going to make everything harder for him, maybe even take away that wind because it's going to be harder to breathe. So I like that because Gunnar Miller, to me, I've seen a lot of him just come across like a big brute who can do crazy power moves, but having him here show off that he also can show some game plan, I think is really important to kind of take him to that next level. And I think he's actually really right on that cusp. And I was not completely sold on Gunnar Miller up until, I mean, very recently, but I think the big match with Riddle that we just watched recently, this match here, I'm kind of getting sold on him as a guy who I think could be starting to make it into that great worker territory. Kyle Matthews is underdog, veteran babyface with this mask on, really harkens back to an older time that I just love. It reminds me of kind of childhood of masked Southern babyface wrestlers that you don't really see anymore. It's so good that the crowd actually cheering for Gunnar Miller even seems to fade by the end of the match. So good on Kyle Matthews for being able to really get the crowd behind him as a pure babyface or the babyface of the match. Kyle going for multiple splashes I thought was really cool. And then he goes for one more big time dive and that's what costs him the match. So just shows Gunnar Miller is, he proved his point. This is one of his longer matches. Commentary again does a great job of putting that over. They really told that story that even in a longer match, which he's been untested in, he is still able to deliver. He's got Kyle Matthews, who probably thinks he's so worn out that he can keep going to the same well with the big dives over and over again to just win the match. But Gunnar Miller, even in the deep waters, shows that he's still ready. He's still thinking, and he's able to catch him, finish him, put him away. Really good stuff. I gave this match 4 stars. I hate to say it, but the crowd and the production might have affected it to where if this was high quality, really well produced, I could see everything a lot better, I might have even gone higher on this match, honestly.
Okay, well, you liked it more than me. I liked it a lot. I gave it 3.5. I love Matthews keeping Gunnar off base, like with the dives to start. Matthews on the arm, and Matthews' arm work is really on point. Love the kick to the elbow. Totally digging Matthews' shine. Gunnar is a total blue chipper. His selling's getting better, but he really should watch like some Magnum TA matches to truly show how to connect with his selling. You see also when he's in control, he needs to add a couple more signature power spots to keep things more interesting, because I felt his heat segment was the what kept me out of the 4-star range, where, I mean, it was telling a story. He's working the back. But there was times when he went to the headlock, and you know what? Gunnar working a headlock just isn't all that engaging to me. But it'd been cooler if he was, like, you know, do some tilt-a-whirl backbreaker or a buckle bomb or just something.
Even like a torture rack. Like a torture rack.
Yeah, even
a
torture rack. You know, even an old backbreaker. Even the old stuff that no one does anymore, which was a trope in wrestling in the 70s, was someone sitting down in the sitting down position, and all you do is run and put all jump up in the air and put all your weight on someone's shoulders. But you're working the back. I mean, it's just a basic move. All you're doing is landing on the guy's shoulders and back area. It's just something more interesting than a freaking headlock. So maybe he should be taking a look. He should be watching as many like Cesaro and or Roman Reigns or Sheamus matches with guys who have a high variety of offense, and maybe steal another move or two from them and work it into your repertoire. I loved Gunner's cutoff to target the back by catching Matthew's tope and putting him into the post, big time spot. Miller focusing on the back was great. They really had this out. They really laid this out smartly. Really strong psychology. Again, Matthew's comeback is real strong, but he definitely gets cut off at the end. And I love the reversal and the finality of the finish. On paper, it sounds like I liked it even more than how I rated it. But I just felt some of Gunner's control segments were a little like hee-haw. Where it needed to be a little bit more dynamic to get to be there to that 4-star level. But what they did was damn good. And you get clear. It was definitely a great. Whoever laid it out was fantastic. It was great. And it was really smartly worked. And I just wish Gunner had another like cool spot or two to work over into pepper into that Heat segment of his. Then we get AJ Gray and Slim J. And this is essentially your Ravishing Rick Rude Sting match from The Clash that people remember so highly because of the injury angle and Sting stealing the ambulance to get back. I mean, they obviously Anarchy doesn't have the money for that type of segment, but what they did was did an injury angle that Slim J fought back and they told the story in the ring. I thought it was really well done. Love seeing Hollis attacking Slim J pre-match and Gray just works over the injured leg. I like how commentary was saying, well, if Gray was such a gentleman, he would work over a different body part, not the injury that they attacked him on. So getting over that Gray is actually a heel here. Slim J's comeback was good. I thought this was just a good story-driven match. And again, this time the interference though happens pre-match instead of post-match or during the match. But what they did was really well done. They just didn't have a whole lot of time to tell the story. But what they did was they got the story over. What'd you think of it, man?
I think I'm pretty much with you there. I think that with the time that they had, they got the story pretty well. I thought that AJ Gray working kind of even more than subtle heel, I think kind of heels leaning, maybe mid-turn heel. He was looking good, and then I think he went too high-flying too quickly for me, and I really just kind of showed a lack of depth. I know he's a rookie, but to me, I just think that if you're going to try to switch to heel, you need to show me that you can work more grounded style long enough to get through to, I mean, this match was not super long, to be able to get through this match without needing to go to the top rope for big flashy dives, because that's all the offense you have. Like, I want you to continue with the leg work and stay on the leg work, but he's going up for the big splash. And, to me, I thought that hurt the match quite a bit. Slim J, from there, he off that dive does use that as his cutoff to then get going. But gets cut off repeatedly. That was my only issue. It was quick, obviously, because of the pre-match angle. And I just thought that AJ did not show enough depth as a worker to stay heel here going for that. I liked the finish with just the kind of quick knee bar to put it over. I gave it 2 3/4 stars. I liked the action. I thought that they told the story well. But I just, yeah, that was my biggest takeaway is just that Slim J is, I mean, he's a rookie, or not Slim J, but AJ Gray is a rookie, but he's not ready to work heel yet. So unfortunately they probably shouldn't have put him in this setting.
Okay. Then we got this ladies singles match. What you make of this?
I honestly, at this point, don't want to talk about it at all. I gave this a dud. Okay. I did not like it. It was clearly put in a death spot to be nothing. Yeah, the commentary... I couldn't understand the story. It sounded like the person who was supposed to be the heel stole the belt, but then she also was like standing tall to fight in the beginning. And I'll just say that like this felt a lot like that. There was the ex-WWE writer who talked about how there's no heels and faces in the women's division in WWE at that time because all women are just crazy bitches. And it felt like that was the way this match was being booked, like with the idea that there wasn't actually a heel or a face and they're just both crazy bitches.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Then we got Logan Creed versus Jeter in a lumberjack match. I like this match, actually. I give it 3 stars. Total hoss fight. But here's the twist. Instead of them fighting each other immediately, they both turn on the lumberjacks and beat the crap out of the lumberjacks. I guess it's a way of getting over. I mean, to me, that's a double-edged sword. Well, yeah, cool. We got over our monsters as even bigger monsters. But shit, man, we just screwed up the stip. So, achieving the stip. So, I mean, whatever you want. I mean, one way or the other, you're either going to... I thought it was a bad decision. But for a twist, I thought it was interesting for going out there and trying it. I'll tell you that much, though. Even though I didn't agree with it. But pretty much I love Jeter's knees to the ribs. Post match he had Gunner come out and all that jazz, and I thought Creed and Jeter had a big hoss fight that resonated for me. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you on every point. I think that these guys worked as really great big men. I agree with you completely on the opening. I think that it was trying to be too cute and thinking of a way to subvert the stip to help put over these monsters. But I think, like you said, what it does is it ruins the stip, it makes it pointless, and it negates the stip. I think that there's a way to get them over as big-time monsters without doing it that way. And it's kind of, I hate to say it, but it's something I've seen before, and I think it's a basic... way to do this. You can get the same point, but you don't ruin the whole point of the lumberjack match. Is you have the first time one of the big guys gets sent to the floor, the lumberjacks, instead of jumping him, back away because they're actually scared of the big guy. And you just do that a couple times to put over that they're big. And then once they're beat down a little bit, that's when the lumberjacks do their actual deal. And they actually, you know, are involved in the match like lumberjacks. I think that still gets both guys over, but then it doesn't also make you question why should I even give a shit about this match. But that said, these guys worked like big men, like big monsters. They made everything mean something. They got big, big payoff from every move that they did, which there was not a lot of moves involved. And I even kind of liked the finishing angle on this, but after a card with so much angle, this was just like one more kind of, you know, thing happening at the end of the show. It's funny to think that you'd say this about a company that didn't have anything that you would call a PWG style match. They didn't have Will Ospreys. They didn't have really any crazy high flying action. There was no, you know, Misawa Kobashi chop exchanges. There was no head drops. But I think that, you know, putting together the Anarchy shows, they could probably, you know, think about the idea of less is more. Because I think that they went a little bit over the top with the angles and the interference.
It was clearly overbooked. Very overbooked.
Yeah. So I think that it's funny to say that because I think that most people who think of that think that it only applies to, you know, the in-ring flipping as an action like that. But to me, this match, I think by the end of it, I was so... overdone with angles that I couldn't really get up for the final angle of the show, which should probably be the thing that makes you the most excited. That said, I gave the match 2.5 stars, so you liked it a little bit more than me, but I also still enjoyed it, and I thought that the workers did a really good job in there of getting themselves over.
Yeah, I'm with you about the overbooking. I've been to shows where, like, I went to one show, what I absolutely loved with the booking was we didn't have any, like, great, amazing matches, but damn, the card built and built. It was 5 cards, 5 matches, only the first three matches, no one went to the outside. Finally, in the fourth match, there was brawling, went to the outside. So they made it special because they maximized when you went outside. The last match, they allowed to have some blood in it. So, you know, there was like a discipline to the booking. Here, there wasn't a discipline to the booking. It felt like they greenlit every interference spot imaginable, and none of them got over because of that. And again, you got to, sometimes you're going to go overboard. You got to make it special. If you overboard it every single match, it doesn't resonate. You look at Hulk Hogan when he showed up in WCW in his first match against Flair at Bash at the Beach. Guess what? Every other match on that show, the heel went over. The only babyface who went over that day was Hulk Hogan. So they maximized. They at that point, when the heels had won every single match, finally when Hogan wins, the crowd erupts because they're happy. They finally they get a decision they wanted to see, supposedly. And at this point, Hogan, this was in Orlando, so this was Hogan country, not a normal WCW area where they would not see Hogan beat Flair. And so the crowd erupted, you know, babies were thrown in the air, and it was also because they protected it. And, here this finishes were not protected well at all. And it detrimentally hurt the show, even though they put on a good in-ring show. So it's not always about the talent and the matches. Everything intertwines, and here it just didn't click. Any final thoughts there, Timothy?
I liked it. I like Anarchy for what they are. They're kind of one of the last bastions of a certain style. That is kind of what I grew up on and all that. But I think that they could step back and make just kind of do some a little bit more straight up wrestling. I hate to say that because I probably come across like that's always what I want, but I think that they'd be better off just having just some wrestling with just some clean finishes and some basic winners and losers, and then I could be a little bit more into it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this was a big show that was pushed in a certain way, or maybe there's a reason for it, but for me, it was just a little bit over the top.
Fair enough. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk about the PCW shows on Powerbomb.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. We're looking at the two episodes of PCW where they ran a tournament. Not one tournament, but two tournaments simultaneously. They had a singles tournament and a tag tournament. on one day, two shows, one day tournament. And I got to admit, I had problems getting through the show. I think part of it was that they had so much, so I had to put some, because they were running two tournaments simultaneously, they had to really flesh out, they had to really put a lot of people on the show. And we got a lot of like, what the hells, or a lot of misses, or things just didn't engage me, or the matches, they had a lot of matches on the show, but they were just not long enough to grapple me in. Maybe I wasn't all familiar with all the talent on the show. There could be a wild range of things. Maybe I was just tired. What about you, Tim? What were you thinking?
So, on paper, I think a company running a double shot day with two tournaments running concurrently on the two shows sounds like it should be, like, extremely my shit. Like, it fits. It hits a lot of my boxes for stuff that
I love tournaments on the indie level.
Yeah, I love indie tournaments. I love weird stuff where people are running, like, in between shows and crazy stuff like that. Like, I love this kind of stuff, but PCW's production value is not on point. The commentary is annoying. The crowd, I guess, was fine. And it just, the way that it's presented, the way that everyone acts, the way everything looks, it makes the whole thing come across minor league, and then it also really feel like the wrestlers worked as if it was minor league as well. So it's just so, it then becomes so much of stuff that just comes across like it's not top level, with a lot of the same guys over and over again, the same personalities, just mixing in and out. Stuff starts to bleed together and starts to not feel like there's any point to any of it. So
Maybe they could have done one show as the single tournament, the other one as the tag tournament.
Yeah, even that would have probably been better. I mean, yeah,
I could have avoided the tag tournament altogether.
Yeah, it makes it so something like a tournament, which is normally really cool because it has inherent stakes that are automatically built in, it really made it feel like it had no stakes by the end because you just lost track of everything that was happening, or at least I lost track of everything that was going on.
Yep, I will agree on that. The tag tournament had like nothing I cared about whatsoever. Let me take that back. I felt Rampage Brown and his partner T-Bone got over well with me. I enjoyed that team, and I enjoyed Sugar Dunker and his team with the opera singer. I sort of would have enjoyed the other main event team if the big guy was competent or was at least mediocre. Here he's just a green big guy, if you ask me. I think his last name's Justice. What did you make of the teams and stuff, really?
The teams were... So, one thing about you saying that, like, Rampage and T-Bone got over to you is, like, they're, like, the last team that needed to get over. I mean, even though they ended up winning it, because Team Single is, like, the longest reigning tag team champions in the history of the company already.
Yeah.
There already should be a big fucking deal. Like, they shouldn't have been the focus of the tournament to get over, realistically, because they didn't need to be put over. They're already over. So, yeah, it's just, like, coming away from it with them being the standouts just felt like that's just overkill, honestly. So,
do they stand out to you comparatively?
Of course, stood out. They're great. And I thought that the final match was done well with some pretty good storytelling for what they were doing.
Yeah.
But Big T Justice is very green, but he serves his well pretty well. But I just thought that when you're going to... Yeah, I mean, the storyline that they were telling throughout the tag team tournament paid off really well with the setups with Big T Justice. But like you said, he was not able to deliver to finish out that story as well as it should have been.
Exactly. Well, let's get right into this. We open up with Dean Allmark versus Adam Brooks. I thought this was a good, solid work, good mat work to start. I liked Brooks hits Allmark with a tope. Brooks with a hair pull to set up the heat. Brooks with some high impact moves. I thought Allmark used his British style well. You know, I gave it 2.5 stars. It was, and again, I just kind of finished kind of came when bam done instead of being built to. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the everything here.
Yeah.
This match, I think that this showed, like, Dean Ullmark doing, or not Dean Ullmark, Adam Brooks doing the gimmick that I was pushing for Ricochet as that cocky, high flyer guy, but he's just not quite the personality for it that Ricochet, I think, was or is. So yeah, that kind of stuck out for me there. The Ullmark Styles Clash, Smiles Clash, whatever arm trap powerbomb thing is kind of weird. The match just really felt like it was nothing until the finishing stretch with some hot back and forth, but I didn't get a chance to even invest in it. Same as you, 2.5 stars.
What'd you make of the next tag match? Who was it? Danny and Hope versus Baron and who?
Big T Justice. And yeah. Bontel Banham.
Yeah.
It's weird. It looks like Joey Hayes is wearing a bulletproof vest, and then they're kind of putting it over. He's wearing a vest throughout the match. Telmark is wearing a shoulder strap thing. Hope is wearing some weird tassels. It's like all these guys are just gimmick adorned, man. That's what it's all about, I guess. Telmark works a chin lock in the middle of the match. It's just so lame and boring and pointless. There's a point where Danny Hope pops up Telmark or Bantam. Like he's doing something, but it's just nothing, and he just falls flat. It looks dumb. Big T goes for an axe kick that just looks terrible. Then the pin gets the pin off of that. This was boring and sloppy to me. I gave it 1 star.
Yeah, I ended up giving it 2, just because I thought Baron was a good heel in it, and I enjoyed the mat work early on. I liked it, I thought it had too much mat work in it. For a tag team setting, it was odd. Then we got Polo Promotions versus Brown and T-Bone, and I actually really liked this. I give this 3.5 stars. A really strong shine, faces using high impact moves. Love the rope burn to set up the heat. Move over to the arm. Polo Promotions work in the arm. Polo Promotions doing that arm work, the jerking of the arm on the apron, and then facing it into the corner was really good. Polo Promotions really impressed me here on how they were able to work a really good convincing heat segment against these monsters. And I enjoyed what everyone did in a match, so 3.5. What'd you make of it?
3.25. Pretty close to everything you said there, I agree with. I thought that the heat on T-Bone was fantastic. A big-ass guy who's able to sell pretty well was good there. Polo Promotion, like you said, really, really stood out as being able to actually get legitimate heat there. Would have loved something more like this as the finals for the whole tournament, honestly.
Yeah.
If you're going to go with Team Single in the finals, this would have been much better in that setting. Because these guys were able to deliver. And Rampage Brown, he comes in hot as the, you know, returning to form up this legendary tag team, and then he gets the big hot tag that's fiery as all fuck. Really, I mean, the kind of hot tag that's missing in a lot of tag team wrestling nowadays. These guys just don't know how to feed for a hot-ass babyface, but they fed big time for Rampage here because he looked like he had all kinds of ass to kick. It's like that's what I think tends to be a big issue in a lot of tag team wrestling nowadays, is you'll get a fiery hot tag for a babyface, but he runs out of ass to kick within like a second. Cause like one guy will feed for him and then the other guy just disappears. This is the way you got to do it. You got to have both guys feeding for him over and over again so that he comes across like a house of fire. So yeah, I thought that was really good for the finish there. It really puts over team Single as a big fucking deal going out of here. I'm with you. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
What do you think of the next match?
Apollo Crews versus Easton Reese. This is a beef off. Crews looks good here to start. I like Reese getting the quick cut off. He's throwing Crews around from pillar to post. Again, a little bit unimpressive, lazy heat. He's just kind of doing it. But Crews has nice fire from underneath. He fights back as much as he can. Reese keeps on the attack. There's really not much to it for psychology, but like I said, and the heat is kind of pedestrian, but Crews is much better here where he gets to show off some of his hot spots and sell a little bit here and there than what he really gets to do in WWE at this point. It kind of Makes me think of there was a Cruz Sheamus match when he first got called up that I always remember being like, oh, Apollo Cruz could still be good in WWE. And this is kind of similar where he's really good against a guy who can get some heat. It doesn't even have to be that great, just enough for him to be able to sell and then show off what he can do because he's super impressive. I gave the match 2.5 stars, though. There was not, realistically beyond that, there's not much to it. But the crowd is just super hot for Cruz. Obviously he was the longest reigning singles champion for them. So the crowd is invested in him big time. And in a setting like this, he can work, even though he is still a very limited worker.
Fair enough. I thought it was very fast paced, but man, yeah, the match just kind of, I don't know. It was just, Apollo Crews does nothing for me nowadays, man. He's been like, he's just a big muscle up guy who has a nice smile and does nothing for me. I get 1.5 stars. This didn't resonate. That leads us into.
Do you want to skip these tag matches? Because like realistically,
yeah, let's
either
of us
give a shit. We could talk about maybe like the last one, but
let's skip about it. All right. Tag match. Okay, and then we have the Sheik El Sham versus Moose. You know, it was an okay match. I like the Sheik as a character, but it just didn't seem like they knew how to work with one another, really. I mean, I gave it 2.25. It was all right, though. What about you?
I gave it 2.75. I'm with you, but I thought that Moose really kind of, I thought, looked good here. In that, like, I was thinking about it. I talked about it earlier with Jake Dryden, but like, I think that Moose, if this had been the territory era, Moose would be a guy who would make a lot of fucking money.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Going from territory to territory as a big guy who's like a solid worker, but there's nothing great about him. But he's like enough to where he's believable and people get into him. But in 2018...
His athletics are pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like, other than that, I guess, he doesn't have a super good promo. He's got a great look. He's not like
good charisma.
Yeah, good solid charisma. He doesn't get over on social media. So in 2018, he's just like this guy who's like considered like a step below everything else that's happening.
Oh yeah, but in 1985, Ric Flair would be having match of the year contenders with him. Yeah, I know, you're right.
Exactly, and he'd be selling out every fucking night everywhere he goes because he can freshen up. He can go from territory to territory. As soon as he gets a little bit stale and boring because he can't really do much in the way of talking or storylines, he goes to the next town.
Yeah, then they send him down to Memphis, and Jerry Lawler then would have a 4-star match with him.
Exactly. So yeah,
after he'd run through that gauntlet, then he'd send him over to New York to go face Hogan or what have you.
And thinking about him in that context, I really liked him here because he delivered super well. Like, you talk about the athletics are good, but yeah, these guys are not. They weren't super great on the same page with each other, and Moose is not. He's not a guy who would ever carry a match, you know. And I don't think that I could see him having something that's like above a 3-star match with someone who's not a great, great worker. So I gave it 2.75 because like it was good, but it was not great. And it was because I think that Sheik is just not a great worker. So he couldn't help bring Moose up to that next level.
Right.
Moose is where he is and he can deliver it where he is no matter what, but he's not going to have those great matches. I thought it was funny that Moose was wearing his ROH styled gear here too. I think that's great. It's like he's gonna get the money out of that gear because he fucking paid for it. He's not gonna stop.
Hell yeah,
it. I love that. So that's just some old school carny shit too.
And then we got Zack Sabre Jr. with Matt Riddle. You know, I love the grappling here. Totally dug Zack Sabre Jr. catching him in a choke that Riddle counters into a. Into a throw, I thought it was really well done. Loved all the near submissions. So it kind of boils down to like Zack Sabre Jr.'s mat work versus Riddle's suplexes and strikes. Finish though felt completely over convoluted and forced as opposed to built to. Like it came out of nowhere, or it definitely wasn't built to, and it just felt like it was like overly, you know, flashy for the sake of flashiness instead of for effectiveness. With that said, I it was going in the right direction until that damn finish. I still thought they could have gone another 5 minutes. I gave it 3.75. I enjoyed what I got. I mean, I did like the throw. I liked the suplexes versus the mat work. But yeah, but when they went to that finish, I was like, geez, that finish stinks. What do you think of this match?
I liked the finish that Sabre is in a period right now where he's using the prawn hold in a lot of different places to get wins. And he kind of does this. I've noticed that he goes in patterns where he picks a certain finish and he uses that a lot to get it over in a lot of places, and he switches back and forth and around. I liked it for that, but not so much for the way it was placed in the match. And it did feel a little bit like they're portraying... I think Riddle is very protective of himself, so I think he doesn't necessarily like to lose cleanly, or like super cleanly. So that finish was used in a way to kind of hopefully make it look a little bit like he just kind of got caught with a fluke finish. So I get what you're saying, that it's not like great, especially in the settings of the match, and it felt like it came out of nowhere. This match also, I thought that I liked the opening stuff, like you mentioned. I thought that they worked the grappling stuff at an impressive clip to start. Then from there, though, it felt a little forced, and even the commentary says, like, oh, it's so amazing the way that these guys can go from grappling to throwing each other to big strikes, and they can do it all. And it was feeling like this forced showcase of, like, look at us, we're so talented. But then from there, the kind of mix and grappling and strikes started, like, right after commentary called it out. Right after that is when it started to feel less contrived and feel a little bit more natural and real. And then in that, like, meaty chunk in the middle of the match at that point till the finish that, like you said, was a little tacked on, the match was really good. So it was like the opening was nice. There was a little segment that felt a little forced. There was a really good kind of closing finish. And then the actual finish was not great. But like I said, I like that it continues the narrative with Zack Sabre Jr. using the prawn hold right now as his finish. So I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5 stars. I definitely think it's far from the best match between these two. But I did enjoy it. And for the main event of the night, it made sense to put this on last for the first show. I said for the night. I guess I shouldn't say for the night because it's all the same day. But for the main event of the first show, it made sense to have the big foreigner come in and wrestle the guy who's kind of looked at as the best British wrestler in the history of British wrestling, except for the wife murderer.
Yep. And then we get into night two now, and it opens up with Zack Sabre Jr. and Dean Allmark. What did you make of this?
I liked this a lot, but it took me back for a second because it felt like Sabre was working as more of the veteran role and Allmark was working as the heel or the rookie who needs something, has to prove something. But to me, Dean Allmark's been wrestling longer than Zack Sabre Jr., so knowing that history, I thought it was interesting. But once I kind of accepted that, it was actually a really good match. The crowd was popping for everything that Allmark did on the mat to show any kind of dominance over Zack, so I thought that was really impressive. I loved Allmark keeping the pressure on the whole way through, even to the point where it seemed like Zack was getting tired out, a guy who's known for his cardio and his endurance, but especially because he had the last match on the show before this, it makes sense that going into the second show, Allmark's a lot more fresh. Zack gets worn out a lot a bit quicker. And I thought it was interesting because Zack, he looks like he's almost starting to lose it. He gets hit with the big super kick that knocks him loopy. And you could almost say that super kick was the finish of the match. Because even though after that, Zack kind of rallies and comes charging in with the lifter, Allmark grabs him. And he does essentially a move that's done constantly in Zack Sabre Jr. matches where people grab that charging lifter into the backslide. But I love that Allmark turns it up a step by doing the headstand to really make you believe he's putting all of his weight into holding Zack's shoulders to the mat. And again, that super kick took it out of Zack to the point where the backslide actually is able to put him away. I thought they told a good story here. Like I said, being taken aback by kind of having my own idea of what the match should have been, it took me a second to get used to it and adjust. But in the end, I really enjoyed the match, and I gave it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I went 3.75, and I thought the grappling here was really unique, where it's natural but also has like a little World of Sport flair to it, taste to it. I thought the multiple two counts was a tad overdone. Allmark's lifter was about as nasty of a lifter as I've seen. Then they had this strike exchange, which ends up becoming a comedy spot where Zack gets the advantage, and Allmark goes, "Hey, Zack, let's go back to wrestling." Uh-huh. And it's like, if me and you in a fist fight and I'm punching you in the nose and you're like, hey, man, let's start wrestling again. You're hurting my nose. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to hit you back in the nose. It made no sense for them to switch back to wrestling. If Zach's getting the advantage winning a strike exchange, why would he then go back to wrestling? I hate when they do a comedy spot where it where it just takes out all logic to the whole entire match. I would have gone 4 on that, but that logic spot kept it out of that. I was so fucking pissed off on that. It really left a horrible taste in my mouth on otherwise a really pleasant match. Do you remember that spot?
I must have missed it or something, because that does sound like something that I would have fucking hated. I don't know how I didn't notice that, but yeah, that sounds terrible, and that might have even taken me down a little bit more. But luckily, I didn't notice it, I guess.
Yeah, it was terrible. Let me go on to find my notes here again. I'm trying to find where I'm at here.
There's a couple tag matches. Let me see. What do I got? I got 1 at 3 stars. That's the Big T and the Dunkmania match. Not very good. But actually, it was pretty fine. I think I liked the Dunkmania team pretty well. I think you talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
They were pretty good, and I thought that they made that match pretty good. And then Team Single versus Interracial Love, I gave 2 3/4. And another one where I thought Team Single looked really good, Interracial Love. They told a nice story here where Interracial Love was trying to man up, and they even were like able to step to them for a bit, but Team Single is just too much for kind of even these little rookies who are trying to prove that they can step up to be able to keep up with them, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I hate how all these teams had names.
Yeah, know? I kind of love that.
And none of them had matching gear, pretty much, except for except for joint promotions. I hate that. All right, so then we get Moose versus Apollo Crews. What'd you make of that?
This match was a lot better in 2013, or at least I thought it was better in 2013. There's some nice trade-offs. The guys are both super, athletic. Talked about that earlier. Guys are both, like, just phenomenal athletes, but I got no emotion, and you're trying to tell me a story about best friends or fighting, and I'm just getting nothing from it. Like I said, I saw these guys wrestle when they were both kind of still trainees, like years back, and it blew my mind because they could just do these insane spots. Yeah. But in 2018, spots are come a dime a dozen. I mean, they always did, but especially in 2018, there's like a fucking million guys who can do this shit. So in 2018, this match is 2.5 stars for me.
Yeah, I went 2. I really thought these guys were going to really try to tear it up because of them being buddies and stuff. But man, it fell flat to me. Again, really fell flat. Then we got Riddle and Brooks. Again, we got some decent mat work. Matt Riddle should never ever do the hokey pokey. you know, you're saying he's protective of his finishes. He should be more protective of doing dumb, stupid shit like the hokey pokey. I like Brooks stomping a mud hole in Riddle's barefoot. I think that makes sense. I like Brooks then stomping and working over the foot on the ring post. Overall, I thought it was good stuff. Good solid 3-star match. But yeah, there was some stuff that's just jarringly bad, like the hokey pokey. What'd you make of it, man?
Same as you, 3 stars. I liked the stuff. I think that Brooks, I watched Brooks in Australia and I've enjoyed him, and I think he's very good in the Australian scene, but I don't think he's being exposed necessarily in the European scene, but I think he needs to get his feet under him a little bit better. And this match I think was a good step in that direction. I liked early on, he's cocky, he thinks he can grapple with Riddle, he really quickly finds out that he cannot, so he goes for the cheap shot stomping the foot. I thought that's some good stuff. And then from there, like you said, talk about focusing on the match a lot, really gets into some of the best stuff that Riddle does, especially in the closing stretch. But I think that unfortunately, the thing that affects Riddle for me a lot is that his best stuff are these really awesome stretch runs that can go move for move back and forth. And when that has been the style, the main event style of New Japan for like the past 4 or 5 years of like really high end, crazy back and forth stretch run finishes of every big time match, seeing Riddle do it even at this level of how good he is doesn't come across as a big deal to me, because really it's just, it really loses its kind of novelty to me, because you see this kind of style so much. Like I said, 3 stars, good stuff. Both guys look good here. I'm looking forward to seeing Adam Brooks continue to get his legs under him. It kind of reminds me of LP, El Fantasmo. Same thing. It's like I saw him in Canada. I always thought he was really good. He was the big fish in the little pond. He came into England, and it took him a little bit to get his feet underneath him. But then once he did, he turned back into the same guy. And I think Brooks is in the same stage. I think he needs to get his kind of his sea legs. He needs to get used to working in the UK, and then I think he'll be right back to having the great matches that he was having before.
Yeah, and then we get to the main event, which was Dean Allmark versus Apollo Crews. What'd you make of it?
I didn't like it. I thought that Crews, after working pretty much babyface the whole time, should be it was kind of working dominant heel here for the underdog babyface. I didn't get a lot out of it. I felt like at this point, this match should have been about getting big time heat on the babyface Allmark. We should have had a really believable heel here, so that the crowd could get 100% behind Allmark, but they were not, because Crews did not deliver on getting that heat. He should look like this kind of golden Adonis who's just bragging and gloating over this kind of homegrown kind of, I mean, tub of guts looking pasty doughy guy who just has this heart of, you know, all this fire and won't give up. And I just didn't get that. And that's like, I could tell that that's what they were trying to deliver, but it just didn't come across. The crowd didn't buy into it. Apollo Crews did not deliver for the heat side of it, any of that. So yeah, then the finish comes super quick. Backdrop driver attempt gets rolled up into like a victory roll position pin. I mean, I gave it 2.25 stars. I don't even know if that's right, honestly. There was just nothing to this, and it felt like the crowd was spent. They did not set up the right person. I kind of understand the idea of wanting Crews in the final because he's a big deal, but he was not the right guy to be the heel foil for Allmark. And I hate to say this, but I mean, it probably should have been Sabre. I think out of anyone in the tournament, Sabre would have been the guy that could actually deliver on a dickhead heel beating down on Allmark for, you know, however long this is, to the point where it felt like it was getting ridiculous so that the crowd would actually get really behind him. And I don't think that Crews was that guy, because he just doesn't produce heat. I've really never seen Apollo Crews be able to get any heat at all, so I don't know why they thought he'd be able to do it here.
Plus the whole entire thing, they babyfaced him the whole show.
Yeah, so it never made sense why you'd be able to get any heat on him at this point in the match, like, yeah. Realistically.
They're like, oh, the prodigal son returns and all this stuff, and try to make him sound like he was like a PCW regular, which I didn't buy for a second. I think he worked there plenty, but not. They made it sound like he was almost like, you know, synonymous with PCW, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, in some ways he was, but it was at a time when PCW was probably at its lowest visibility ever. So, like, he's not really thought of as, like, a big-time PCW guy, because it was at a point when no one was paying attention to PCW anyways.
Fair enough. Yeah, overall, though, man, I'd have to give the show, like, a thumbs down for me. I really didn't dig it at all. I don't know, maybe I just wasn't in the mood for it, or it didn't click with me. I mean, there's some decent stuff, but, yeah, everything just seemed just there. There was a couple, couple things to check out, but for the most part, everything was just there. What about you? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you're making me say both shows combined, then yeah, it's definitely a thumbs down. I think I could almost give a thumbs up to just the second show by itself, but even then, the crowd was so dead that it affects the quality of the show to begin with. Like, yeah, it's, I felt like it was not a good kind of first step for PCW streaming live on Powerbomb. I don't think that they put their best foot forward here. And I think it was an ambitious choice, honestly, for looking like all around what they were doing. And as I said, it almost felt like it was tailor-made for something that I would really be into. It's, you got tournaments on tournaments. You got interesting two shows back-to-back showing you could definitely do like a two-show long storylines, mixing everything back-to-back from it being within the same day. But it didn't deliver on any of that.
Yeah. Man, anything you want to plug, buddy?
Same old, same old. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Listen to the podcast Lucha Undead on PTBN Pop. Got a special co-produced episode of, Fight or Dead Network Friends or whatever it's going to be called, but Fight Network Friends and the Dead, me and Quentin Moody, are going to review the Tetsujin tournament here in about a week, so that should be coming out soon. Look out for that, because I expect that to be a lot of fun. So that's everything for me. How about you, Pete?
Follow me on Titans of Wrestling, and remember Worldcast Wednesday. Follow me over there, doing reviews usually of World Class, and some maybe every now and then some other stuff. But of course, you know, at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week, guys. We'll see you later. Stepping in, tossing pot. Ha! Hoo!